Hello, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Scales of Truth. Going to do something a little bit different in this episode and maybe in some upcoming episodes to get some of my work more in the same spot. Kim Schultz and I have a podcast called Kimology 411, and therein, here and there, I've got to take the lead on some major informational segments. So I've gotten permission from Kim to get some of those over here where I've been the lead. So what I'm going to do is just drop those episodes into a little bit of a wrapper over here. And this first one that I'm going to do that for, so you'll be hearing the other voices, Kim Schultz. You'll be hearing some extraneous stuff too. So consider it a tease for Kimology 411. I may edit some of the stuff out. On the other hand, I may just drop it right in as one episode, maybe take out the outro and intro. In fact, let's just go ahead and assume I'm going to take out that outro and intro. So we will be dropping into the middle of this. First one is episode 78 on A Good American. And this is really, really good information. That's all I'll tell you. It really gets to behind the scenes of how government works and how just like one of the cryptographic geniuses in the history of the world got shade thrown at him and then lost a job because honestly his well-working elegant solution was just too easy and did not line enough pockets, even in relation to another one that lined a thousand times more pockets and then some, and didn't provide the protection or the solution in any way, let alone in an elegant one. So yeah, we'll be dropping into episode 78, A Good American, of Kimology 411. So enjoy.
All right. So our main topic is A Good American. And I just have to tell you that I am in tax season. So Tyson has stepped up his game on coming up with topics because we had talked about doing this. We had both watched it. I watched it again this evening so that I could kind of remember. I did not watch it as Tyson would watch it.
Worst case, it might be an excursion, but right. Then it's like, it might
let's
be a good
just,
whole
let's
topic.
Just do a thing. So where were you at on 9/11?
I had just started a new job earlier that week. I forget what day that was. Was it like a Thursday or something? It wasn't the very beginning of the week. It was a day or a couple days or 3 days into it. I just started a new job, Southeast Kansas, and then it happened. So we went home for the rest of the day, came back the next day. It was training. We were in a training week.
Right. I was sitting on my couch. And sitting on my bed, actually getting ready when I watched it and had taken Chelsea to school and called the school and told them that we were under attack. That's what I remember. And then I just sat there for like 7 days in a row and just watched the same footage over and over and over. It's like you just couldn't stop watching. It was like you thought maybe you'd see something different and nope, you just same things, people jumping from a building and...
I didn't watch a lot of it because I was already disturbed enough over the idea. I really didn't watch very much at first. I knew it was going to be pushed at me enough. I didn't watch very much of it.
So this is certainly
about that, but it's also, I got to say, my first impressions, I can't even remember why I decided to watch it, but the premise is the title's A Good American. Then before you know it, you're talking about the NSA. Well, I'm a civil libertarian. Have I ever mentioned that I'm a...
You're a libertarian? How did you keep that from me for so long?
And
drink
so
up,
if
people.
Anybody says to me, a good American that's in the NSA, I'd say odds are against it. I know that'll make some of you guys who are patriots angry. I don't care. I call them the lying agencies. Their main purpose is to lie and spy.
Right.
So to me, I call them the lying agency. So at first I say, I don't think I'm going to be able to follow this very well. But for whatever reason, it drew me in. And it ended up having some good distinctions that were excellent that I see in society in general, that I see patterns for, was part of it. And another part was, part of it is A Beautiful Mind. I've never seen that movie, never seen it. Uh-huh. But the idea of just seeing a person, it's kind of like our guy, Tesla.
Michael?
Guy. Tesla.
Oh,
guy.
No. Elon?
Yeah, Elon Musk. it's like just amazing to see somebody that seems far above.
Like you can physically see their brain working, like cogs thing.
So part of it is that it amazed me, and the documentary was basically drama quality because of the stakes that were on hand. A Good American is the name. Now the attention grabber, as the film opens up with a Bill Binney, who's an NSA analyst. He is the legendary Beautiful Mind analyst. He says, Thin Thread was a program that absolutely would have prevented 9/11. So it all went back to that program. Next thing. First thing he said to me was, I need you to know I would never deliberately commit suicide. And this is Binney's whistleblower attorney, Jessica Raddick. Right. So that was kind of grabbed your attention, and it went from there. So, I'm going to try to go through this in as organized way as possible, and you can jump in, but you know I just spent a lot of time structuring this. I want to set a little bit of context for you. There's not that many people, just so hopefully you can follow along a little bit better. There's only so many people to worry about as far as the main players. One is a Bill Binney, B-I-N-N-E-Y. This guy is a dead ringer for Michael Shannon, who played General Zod in Man of Steel, Detective in Nocturnal Animals, which I haven't seen. You've seen him in movies. He's been in a lot of movies. Knives Out, 99 Homes. I haven't seen either. I've seen 99 Homes, and that was actually very good now I think about it. He played Colonel Richard Strickland in The Shape of Water, also very good. So Bill Binney, just you can picture him as an older Michael Shannon. He's the legendary NSA analyst. He is the main protagonist of our story. He was at NSA headquarters from from 1968 through October 2001 as a main player there. There's another person very important and very brilliant, and Diane Rourke. She's a former senior staffer at the House Intelligence Committee assigned to the NSA account. So she's important. And when I say people are brilliant, they see past the usual.
Right.
And they go ahead and make the conclusions that it's like, I don't care how many people said that could work. That's not going to work.
Right.
So that's only two main ones, and I'm going through good guys first. The right-hand man of Bill Binney is a guy named Ed Loomis, and he was a former senior computer scientist at the NSA. He's the right-hand man in that Bill's beautiful brain put together algorithms, but he wasn't a computer programmer per se. He could tell you what rules things had to follow.
Right.
And so Ed Loomis was the computer scientist that put together a system that they created. And another one was Kirk Weeb. I'm just going to say he's a former senior analyst. Those three, that three group were right in the NSA in a group together, Kirk, Ed, and Bill. You have a software engineer named Tom Drake who also overlapped with them. He was initially a contractor. Think of this guy as having an angular face, and he's a little bit younger. And then you have a Jessalyn Raddick, who is a whistleblower attorney for Bill Binney and others. And she was also a whistleblower herself. We're actually not going to talk about her much, but she's pretty incredible. And so those are only five people. You've got the three main people right in the middle of it. You've got the senior staffer at the House Intelligence Committee, who's the woman. You've got the side guy, who's a software engineer, who was there for like 8 years. And then you've got the whistleblower attorney. Bad guys. Sam Visner, former chief of signals intelligence, which this is this area the rest of these people are in general. And he was a former senior vice president at SAIC, a company that ends up getting a big contract we're going to talk about, Sam Visner. Maureen Baginski was third in charge at NSA and sometimes did really stupid things. Maureen. And General Michael Hayden was director of NSA starting in 1999. So we only got about eight or nine people. First thing I'm going to tell you what we're going to talk about. One, Bill Binney, A Beautiful Mind. We're going to have quotes about Bill to kind of set up how brilliant this guy is. We're going to have quotes from Bill because this guy... We're going to go over the big ideas. The big idea, keywords versus early metadata analysis. So the context of this is these people are in NSA, National Security Agency, that big kind of shadowy organization that's kind of, you know, more secretive than CIA.
Right.
And they're getting signal intelligence, kind of like the CIA. They're getting information that they're trying to interpret coming from foreign and overseas. And what is going on? What are the Soviets trying to do? What are the Chinese trying to do? What's going on? So the NSA is what we're talking about with that, trying to make sense of all the chatter and communication that's going on in the world. So quotes from Bill will be about that type of stuff. And then the big ideas, that's why I'm mentioning NSA, is that we're going to go over the big idea and Bill's beautiful mind, how he took what the NSA was doing and realized that's dumb. There's more to do here, and it's much more efficient, if not just a separate layer of analysis, but later on, more efficient. So that's the big idea, keywords versus early metadata analysis. Then we're going to talk about some of the things big time Benny did. You see, I've got some alliteration going, mostly the B word. Then we're going to talk about the big problem in the mid-90s when things started going to more the computer age and the cell phone age.
Right,
the big 90s, it became a big issue that the NSA had to tackle and how. They're behind the times. Then we're going to get to his big solution, and he called it the big-ass graph. And Thin Thread, which is this brilliant program that the NSA made internally. Then we'll talk about the big boop. I don't know why I came up with that one. My boss says boop, like when you screw up. Oh, you made a boop. And what this is about is we had this gorgeous program called Thin Thread that this beautiful mind came up with. And instead, someone decides to do a massive contract instead and ignoring this thing that's working beautifully. And then we'll talk about Benny and company being pushed out. And then also privacy sideline, privacy being pushed out. Because as you can imagine, for me, a civil libertarian, anything from the NSA, I'm worried about like Snowden-type stuff. You know, the Snowden revelations and spying on us. Well, it's not always been the way, but it becomes a concern around this time period. And then we'll talk about 9/11 disgraceful reaction right after. And then post 9/11, what it would have caught. And then we'll have a little postscript. So that's kind of the way we're going to go with it. Now, Bill Benny, you would agree this guy is the main protagonist.
Yeah.
And what I like about Bill Benny, if you watch him, is that some people are full of words. It's like they're trying to impress you and do either the slang term. This guy doesn't try to act smart. He doesn't try to throw big words at you. He just explains it, and you know the intelligence is just coming off of him.
He's honest. He just speaks honest and openly.
And the other thing about it for me is that all these guys, and it makes sense because they were high-level NSA folks, all these, and these women, they're older in the tooth. Not one of them is, they still all seem incredibly sharp.
Right.
You don't see any of that, like, and sometimes with certain people, when that drop-off happens, it's just steep and it happens quickly.
Yeah.
But all these people, it seems like they could be at the top of their game.
Well, so, I was going to say, because Bill, you have to think back to when he started, because it was the Vietnam War, right?
Started in 65,
something like that. Anyway, he didn't want to go. He was talking about how he didn't even want to go hunting. And they would go to the areas where he was from because they were hunters. And, of course, they had guns, so they were going to get them to go into the military.
Those types of rural folks often were good with their rifle. And so
they
would
want to bring him in there. So he decided he really didn't want to do that. But when he went and tested, at that point, they were already like, dude, why don't we send you to like Turkey or someplace?
Yeah.
And we're going to have you start building some other stuff. And so that, I believe, is where he kind of got started.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. We're going to get to that.
Was that. And I like the fact that it went the right way for him.
I didn't even want to hunt anymore. I was a hunter and could hunt, but I never killed anything. Yeah, he said
even hunting. And I said I even stopped it, and then I didn't want to kill people.
He went to Turkey at first and was overseas and immediately near Army intelligence and started working his craft, which he was just a natural for.
Yeah,
just incredible. So, but really quickly, although we set up some things about Bill, this is Weeb, who's the coworker, who's a former senior analyst with the NSA. I'd say one of the three, if you will, the three main people. And he said Bill by far was the most astute, the most capable, accurate analyst he'd ever known. Used all the tools necessary, not only to find the story but to complete it. Where we weren't able to read the encrypted messages, he found ways to leverage indicators that I've never seen anyone else do. This is going to be a big theme for this because he understands it's not necessarily about what the person's saying. You can draw a lot more data, like who are they talking to, how often, and when.
Right.
And so that becomes a really revolutionary concept at the time. Another person said, this is a Diana Rourke, the former senior staffer in the Intelligence Committee, who I said on the NSA account. Diane, rather. I think I just said Diana. Bill was Mr. Externals at the NSA. He was the person in the agency who knew the most about what we now call in the digital age metadata.
Yep.
Another person, Rourke. Oh, I'm sorry. It's Rourke again then. If something was encrypted and you couldn't decrypt it, you could still get information out of the external signals, and that was Bill's forte. So you can see where he's coming from is just different than a lot of people. Weeb says, Bill would find ways around the encryption to see things that people don't even look. Like I said, part of this for me is just an analysis of a beautiful mind. And I think that's
right.
Those of you will be interested in that. So I'm kind of, whetting your appetite with that. People didn't even look for. He was able to work almost any challenge, almost any problem, and draw upon mathematics and other inherent analytical skills and the willingness to be open-minded, not closed-minded. We're about to come up on some of his quotes, which I think are beautiful. And one last person, this is his big programmer guy, Ed Loomis. He had a good BS detector. He could tell when someone was blowing smoke, and he was the agency's best traffic analyst, bar none. Now,
that's
this guy
amazing.
Was with the NSA from like 68 until 2001. Quotes from Bill. I love some of these because it's not flowery. It's just to the point, and he
right.
says them so simply. He's not. One of the main reasons we get into war is mistakes by leadership because they're misinformed or entirely uninformed. He always figured that's his goal. I want
right.
people to be working off of accurate information.
Hello, that'd be
that's
nice.
That's his goal, yeah. Everything is human behavior. Human behavior is extremely patterned. How do they operate? How do they interact? And how does that manifest or appear in this abstract set of communications you're looking at? It's a matter of getting to the point where you can understand the patterns and interpret them properly. Makes you think of the Matrix
right.
scene, right? Where it's just like, I see a beautiful woman having a steak or whatever. This one I love because you probably know the story behind it because you've watched this twice. If you want something, it gave me a lesson. He said, if you want something done, you have to just go do it. You never ask for permission, only ask for forgiveness.
Yep.
If you have to, it asks for forgiveness if you have to. In the end, sometimes you don't have to. Once you solve the problem, it's no longer a problem.
Right. That's exactly what that's my motto that I've always lived for. And that's exactly what I do.
But part of the dynamics of working in an organization is all that someone by themselves, and I'm not taking away from you. I mean, that's
right.
probably why you is to go, well, I've asked enough people and had too much feedback. I'm going to go ahead and do something,
yep.
show what the result is,
yep.
and we can go from there. And he did that to great effect.
Yes.
He said, this one I love. My philosophy was very simple. If someone says something is impossible, then that's something you have to do. It's like open-minded thinking.
Hello, I am. See, him and I have to be related.
You don't bound your thinking. You let it float
right.
wherever it wants to go. So that gets you the idea of how you can be creative in any environment.
Right.
That's what I was after, being creative anywhere I went. So that's what the SARC, the SIGINT Automation Research Center, was all about. Very quickly, what he realized was that the NSA's idea was just grab all the data and have a bunch of people look at it every day in no real sorted way because there's too much stuff. And he said, we have to automate this in some
yeah,
way.
Yeah, we need to make
so
it
So he
better.
Founded the SIGINT, Signal Intelligence Automation Research Center, in the middle of NSA. The beauty of math, part of it is he loved math. He loved the
yes.
logic. The beauty of math is that it is an attempt to structure common sense and consistencies in the universe. That's all it is. There is no chaos. There is nothing that is infinite. Everything is structured. And it's just a matter of finding that structure. Like this fucker was not intimidated by any mental, intellectual challenge. That's what I love about it. When he later, I think I capture this, when he talks about the tracking 2.5 billion phones.
Right.
Okay, he said when it got to that point where the whole thing started to fall into place and so you could reconstruct the entire system, their entire system of command and control and everything they were doing. So what he was able to do, we'll get into the metadata thing a little bit more important, is just look at the traffic. And he would reverse engineer, looking at traffic signals, intelligence, communications coming from the Soviet Union, not even necessarily seeing the content of the messages.
But who's
just seeing
talking
how
to who,
it worked.
How current, how often they're talking.
He, with a pencil and paper, constructed the Soviet command structure. I just love it. So now the big idea, keywords versus early metadata analysis. This is about as complicated as it's going to get. So it's
right.
Okay. So when you think, okay, if I'm good at search engines, what do I know how to do? I know how to do the Boolean algebra. I'm looking for Kim and accountant. Man, I can't remember her last name. Kim and accountant or Topeka or social butterflies,
Right.
So all these nested keyword deals.
Hashtags, basically.
Yeah, kind of like that. Those are keywords.
Yep.
But the problem with keywords is they were just throwing keywords at all this information. And it's not always very accurate, and it's too much information.
Right.
They had these giant sites near the Iron Curtain that were catching signal intelligence, whether it's, I don't know, radio, whatever it all might be. It's too much. But this technical distinction is huge, but it's not that hard to understand. We've kind of gone over it. I'm going to tell you this analogy. This is keyword versus early metadata analysis. The keyword, that's actually decoding or hearing the content, right? And then using that. So here's my example. What if I said this president is the bomb? What would keyword say?
Bomb.
Near the word president.
Right.
Is that good? Is that a good signal? No, I was using slang.
It's actually kind of what they do on the internet right now. Like right now, we are tracked that way to where, this is now. If you say I want to build a bomb ass house, using like badass, they're gonna see like I want to build a bomb. That's all they see.
This president is the bomb. They'd be like, what? And that would waste their time.
Exactly.
It didn't mean anything.
Yeah.
This whatever singer really be blowing up. It's like that doesn't mean anything. But keywords, it would catch something. It would be a waste of people's time, let alone when you're looking at millions and billions of things.
Exactly.
And so versus metadata. Metadata is data about the data. This is a quote here. As traffic, this is Loomis, the software guy. He said, we care about who is talking to whom, how often, when, what's the pattern of talking, who are they talking down to, who are they talking up to, what's their subordination, the command and control structure of the organization. And one way I would say that is that Tyson can talk all day about whatever seems a little bit, he's a little out there. But guess what? Who's he talk to? His sister, his mom, a couple of friends, and Kim. None of which are a known terrorist or anything like it.
Right.
So if you know that metadata, you can say there's no reason to look at his communication.
Right.
But and otherwise, what if I do start connecting with one person? A little bit. But then all of a sudden, this one person who's a little bit iffy, and then I'm connecting with him and another guy. Both of those guys are iffy. And then later on, all of a sudden, I'm text messaging. At this age, it would be text messaging and calling and whatever else it would be. A lot. All of a sudden, together, it's a flurry. That's metadata without any content.
Right.
That can help you understand something's going on here.
Something is going on. We don't know what it is. Could be a surprise birthday party. Could be a traveling trip.
But based on the association.
Could be a relationship. Communicating with somebody once a week, once a month, once a year, 10 times a day, each one of those situations has a different meaning behind it. You don't even have to know exactly what it is for the fact of being able to watch someone's behavior. And I mean, like, behavior is a big thing as well, because when you are, calls and transmissions and stuff.
What time are you talking to that pretty, what time am I talking to the pretty blonde from accounting?
Right.
Right? Is it at 3 p.m. or is it 3 a.m.?
Right.
And by the same token, so let's say we put it in a military analogy. It's one thing for I was in the Navy, but I don't know Army structure. But whoever's leading the not squadron, whatever, the, you know, a bunch of soldiers would be, the platoon or whatever, they probably don't talk to the big guys a lot. They definitely talk to them, but not a lot. But if suddenly they're talking to them a lot, that becomes interesting, right?
Or
why
is
that?
You're in jail. You are in jail, and all of a sudden you have special privileges, and you're getting to go do, you're with the warden more often. Right. You're seen with the warden. You don't need to know the conversation to know that something is going on. It could be that your mom has cancer and maybe the warden is just giving you special privilege to call her because she's dying or something.
Or
you
it don't could be know, that you're an insider.
Or that you're an insider and that you don't know. But the reality is those, that's, I mean, that's on cheating spouses. This data, you can see a difference on everything.
Now, the problem is we don't have all that visibility.
Right.
But these people do have the visibility, but it ends up being too much visibility.
Right.
And so we have to come up with a solution for it. His metadata is part of it, and then what he builds further.
Right.
So let's talk about Big Time Benny before the 90s problem. So remember, he was there in 68. He deconstructed the Soviet command and control structure with pencil and paper using many intercepts he couldn't even decrypt. Okay, after that, he predicted the Tet Offensive of the Vietnam War. And if you remember this part, he said, we told them it was coming, but the generals didn't want to listen.
Yeah.
And then he said, but some of the people I knew did listen. They kept 50% of their guys in the, oh my gosh, what do you call it, the little gully that you stay in when you're a soldier, so you're more safe. He kept 50% of his soldiers in there all the time, and they lost one guy on day one. One guy. And if everybody had followed that rule, nobody would have lost. They wouldn't have had any problem with it. Instead, though, the people on either, sets of soldiers on either side of them did not do that, so they eventually had to fall back themselves. So they predicted the Tet Offensive. Somewhere in there, he refined 5 true indicators of whether something might be going on. There was some training exercise off of, somewhere. I can't remember where it was. And he said, looking at the signal intelligence and the metadata, really, it's really the metadata. He said the Army had 100 indicators of potential, true action. None of them helped me at all. I came up with 5. And the 5 that I came up with worked over and over again. He said it worked with the Soviet invasion of Czechoslovakia and where he realized it wasn't a training exercise and he knew it. It worked for the Yom Kippur War, which was the October 73 war with the Arab states attacking Israel. It worked with the Soviet invasion of Afghanistan. So this guy's top of his game.
Right.
And with that, this is kind of a precursor to what this mid-90s program Thin Thread. He knew he wanted to take the human hands out of the initial sorting of all this information. How much can we take with a logical? It's kind of like building a good program or an algorithm, but a good one.
Right.
You can build a crap algorithm set or you can build a good one.
Right.
So he said, if we do that and it takes care of some of the initial sorting, then that's really helped us a lot. Instead of you seeing some information that Tyson peeked through because it was happened to be the first 2 of the 100,000 he had to look at today that he picked in no good order. Now you're looking at my translation of it. It's been in human hands. You haven't seen the big picture. If you can have some better initials, that's why he really wanted to automate this. And he made good progress with this. Even in the 80s, he gets an 1983 two-disc drive. What was it? Just a Microsoft, a personal computer with 64K of memory. Okay, the NSA has 8 acres of computers, if you will, computers, whatever, in the mid-80s. And he goes, you know what? There are some of these queries, if you will, on this intelligence information that they cannot resolve. So I'm taking outputs that they said they cannot resolve. I use my algorithms. I'm being Bill Binney right now. I know somebody who's a great C programmer. I can tell them what it needs to do.
Right.
He made it work. And then I run them, and they run resolution. They resolve these problems like that on his 64K personal computer in his office that 8 acres of computers were not solving in the NSA. There we are, Big Time Benny. We got a lot of background, right? Now, what's the big problem? We've talked about it, mid-90s. What's going on? Cell phones are starting.
Yep.
Even the internet age is starting.
Motherhood for me starting.
motherhood from you starting. So communication is exploding. cell phones, text messages too. Text messages were there
early.
Oh,
yeah.
Yeah, and I suppose even pages. Yo, you got your pager?
Yeah, oh, I had a pager. Is that I had a pager back in 19...
Well, shoot,
90,
pagers were
96?
Even in the 80s, weren't they? Were pagers in the 80s?
I don't think
maybe
so.
Maybe later, okay.
Well, doctors had pagers.
So that was going
but
around,
wasn't a 90s was pagers before phones. You couldn't get that. Your phone was like in a big bag up until like 90... I'd have to say 95, 96, 94, because... I had one of the, I mean, I've had a cell phone since the very beginning with my ex-husband.
I've always been a late adopter. So the mid-90s, these things are happening. This is the big problem. The NSA is not doing well. They don't really admit that they're not doing well. They're well in the analog age. They're not understanding the amount of information coming at them is overwhelming. Rourke, this permanent staffer on the Intelligence Committee, she gets a bunch of briefings and goes, yeah, but they say they're doing well, but after 3 months of briefings, I'm like, you've got major structural, cultural problems and technical problems.
Right.
You guys are not doing well. So when I say, just go ahead, you can't be scared to make the obvious conclusion just because there's a bunch of other people just going, duh.
Right. Right?
And that's what I like about this Rourke gal. So the NSA approach was maybe outdated before, but certainly more so with so much more traffic. Their idea was just collect it all and the technicians will sort it out. Right? That's what they said. It's like,
right.
Well, we'll just... And again, the problem is, well, Loomis says they're drowning in garbage. The processes in place before Thin Thread were just wild-carded garbage. Like we said, they're just garbage collectors of wild cards dumping into huge storage systems. And analysts have to just go, I guess I'll look at some of this today. But there's no rhyme or reason, and they can't get through it. There's
right.
no way they can get through it. So they couldn't figure it out. They'd make their database pulls and get hundreds of thousands of returns. What are you going to do with that?
Right.
So it's no wonder they missed intelligence. And remember, this is I'm talking mid-90s, the initial World Trade Center bombing in the basement had happened. Some other stuff happened later in the 90s. They mentioned like the USS Stark, was it?
Mm-hmm.
Where they probably should have caught that. A little boat pulls up to kind of a battleship in port.
Yeah.
And sailors lose their lives. Next section. Bill's big solution, the big-ass graph and Thin Thread. This is worth the price of admission, too, because think of when he's doing this, too. Let me see if I can find that where I said... Okay, yeah, early way of describing it. Benny gets into the NSA, and I can't remember if he started this SIGINT automation thing yet, but it's at least in his head. He's maybe in just a working group around it. And he says, you know what we need to do, this metadata stuff that I've been working on? We have too much signal. We've got to narrow it down somehow. So what's he say? He says, well, what we need to do is a graph relationship of everyone in the phone network in the world. Somebody in the back goes, you can't do that. That's an infinite number of possibilities. And Bill Big Brain Benny says, so it's just all the relationships between 2.5 billion phones. So he said, the combinations are infinite. He said, not so much. Just think of it. This is how big his brain is ready to go. He goes, at any given time, the number of atoms in the universe is not infinite. It's a finite number in the universe. He goes, so this is a smaller subset of that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
No problem.
No, I got this.
We can do that. So eventually that became a part of SARC, which is... He was a founder with maybe Loomis and some other folks, but SARC is a small, what they'll call it, skunk works. Skunk works is where guys just to get together, guys and women just get together and start thinking about real specific things. Skunk works has been in weapons, but that's the idea. It's just inside the building. Let's get together and focus and just kind of work on this problem.
Right.
And it's usually leading edge type stuff. So some people refer to that as a skunk works SARC. They started Signal Automation Research Center, this very idea. How are we going to apply digital ideas to all this information coming in when it's all so much analog and there's so much volume? So Benny has this thing called the big-ass graph, which is the basis of Thin Thread. And he describes the big-ass graph as this. Just in your mind's eye, imagine just kind of a globe, but instead of it looking like the blue Earth, It's made up of a bunch of dots, just like little digital dots, and it's 7 billion of them. Maybe not that many at the time, but whatever it was at the time. All those dots are humans. Now, any connection that that person has, that in one, and he called it a node, it shows, it goes, there's a line over to say it's in Africa. Now, but if somebody in Africa knows Kim, and so the line goes over there. And those nodes would be connected.
Right.
So that's, and basically he said, it reminds me of kind of a weird, I think that's why they call it thin thread. It reminds me of kind of a spider web. Like you could take one node and you could kind of pull on it lightly. Like
it's like a node from the Pitch Perfect when she had to have her nodes taken out.
I don't think so.
When she couldn't sing anymore. Is that a node? Is that the node?
I don't think it's the same, but yeah, those are nodes.
Same node? Okay, never mind. You're trying to say node. That's what
Pitch Perfect. So a little dot. And these dots are connected with lines to other dots, and you can kind of grab one lightly. Benny described it this way. He said, think of yourselves as drifting into the globe. Look at any point and see the relationships they have with all the other dots in the world. You pull out a graph, and with it will come all the nodes it has a relationship with. When you pull that node out in its community, if you will, the social network it had, which that was interesting that he said that, isn't it? The social network
weird.
It had, you pull all the backup data that created those relationships to begin with. So you can now timeline those relationships and see the interactions over a period of time, whatever you wanted to find. You know, how often they, so you see a timeline of one top line might be anything that was emails. And then you see, and they send an email on Monday. And then on Tuesday, they sent 40 text messages all of a sudden. And then later on, they did a phone call at 2 p.m. and then also at 3 a.m. These types of things. So, again, this is how they found traffic worth analyzing. And then once they do find that traffic worth analyzing, they can then go look at that content.
Right.
Now, they don't always need it, but when they do want to go look at the content, they can, they can try to do, they know which ones to focus on.
It'd be like during tax season, if people were trying to figure me out and they were like analyzing my email and my phone, they would realize that I get 4 text messages a day normally. And then all of a sudden I get like 70 to 80 text messages a day. And if they are looking at me as possibly like, what is she doing? They would realize that there's something different going on in my life. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of weird if you look at how your life is, you have the exact same thing. Like when you were buying your house, your whole life changed. So that would be a signal to them as something's going on.
Right.
I mean, you were just buying a house. You weren't going to bomb anybody.
So this is, as far as all this stuff, and timeline wise, we're already getting to almost 2001. So they're saying by 1998, it is usable. A sessionizer is running at fiber optic rates. That's what they basically run on all this data coming in. To bring it in. And they tested it on a German Echelon site in South Germany near the Iron Curtain. And it brings back just these vast returns. And it kind of gives them a clue. Man, it's like, there's a lot of stuff. If this is targeted, there are so many things we're missing. I guess it kind of emphasized to them, what are the analysts doing with the hundreds of thousands? Basically nothing.
Right.
If a targeted return fills up. And by the way, this is automated. So it's going back to the NSA. So they shut that off. And they say shortly after that German test, the whole system was running. It was just a matter of applying it to more data. So they have a system. They go, well, which of these intelligence gathering giant echelon sites and all these with the funny equipment that catches all these communications, are we actually applying the sessionizer and thin thread to? So that they said it works well. We can upscale it. And so it was working so well, they could see no limit to it. And I think this is kind of a quote here. I don't remember. Building relationships between billions of people. We're talking trillions of transactions. It's pretty clear that they were building the most powerful analysis tool that had been built in history to monitor basically the entire world in near real time. By 2000, it was all connected and everything together and running from one end to another 24 hours a day in 3 different sites. As far as I can tell, there are dozens and dozens, if not hundreds of sites, because they do eventually say there would be, Benny requested, can we run these off of, they said, which are these 18 intelligence gathering sites that seem to catch the most terrorist, actual terrorist-related activity? And they said, oh, well, or which ones are they? And they said, these 18. And he said, so can I run my software there? Can I run my program there? he got rejected.
Ugh.
So that's around 2000. We're not far from 2001, and other stuff had happened. There were embassy bombings after there was the start. There were embassy bombings. There had been the World Trade Center bombing. So now we're at the big boop, and we have Thin Thread. It's working great. It was developed in-house by a team of about a dozen people, about six full-timers plus about six contractors, something like that. So this is now Thin Thread versus the Trailblazer program. So in 1999, so remember, Thin Thread is already working well by 2000. In 1999, General Hayden comes in. This is a new guy. And at this time, Congress is pretty disillusioned with the NSA, and he starts the NSA Transformation Office, the NTO. And it's initially ran by one of Bill's friends who knows about Thin Thread and how good it is. And so he comes in and asks SARC, that little signals automation research group there, that, what can you do with 1.2 billion? They're like, what? To 1 point, we're going to need some time to even come up, because that's right. Numbers we never even worry about, which is crazy now, because 1.2 billion is like a penny
right.
These days when it
we're
comes
trillions
to, when
now.
It comes to government waste. And they said their annual budget is only about 2.5 million. So the answer was, well, we could upgrade the entire world. What that meant exactly, just the equipment, I don't exactly know. But they said, well, we could upgrade the whole world, but only take us one quarter of that, 300 million. Same guy comes back a few days later, says, what about 1.4 billion? And they go, Before you know it, that guy who knew how valuable Thin Thread was, and so it would be smart to give Bill the extra money instead of just anywhere else, that guy was gone. The friend of Bill's, the general, replaces him with somebody else. Before you know it, he announces that Trailblazer, this big external contractor situation, that's going to be developed and operated by an external contractor, is going to be what solves the problem and brings the NSA into the digital age.
Mm.
And you're thinking, what do we got to solve? But this is fishy, right? Well, you just heard the 1.2 billion, 1.4 billion, and like, someone's going to make money. All right, so Rourke, our female intelligence staffer, reads up on it. She goes, if I get understanding of this, could you confirm that you're trying to take an analog system and develop it slowly into a digital system? And they're like, yeah. She goes, that's not going to work. That's a non-starter. It's not going to work. And then the general who takes over at the NSA hires two former VPs, or at least they're high executives, I don't remember which, at least one was a former VP, of a company called SAIC as deputy directors in this area of NSA. And who ends up getting the contract for Trailblazer? This company called SAIC. And spoiler alert, Trailblazer is considered a failure before it even gets implemented. They'd spent something like $2.5 billion. So there you go, about 1,000 times as much for something that they never even implemented. I can't remember, it's over $1 billion. Some people said it was more like $4 billion.
Oh my gosh.
Benny and company sidelined and pushed out. So remember, the SARC is up and running. They're doing Thin Thread. It works, but it's consistently minimized or hidden. You know, the people kind of hear about Thin Thread. They want a briefing, right? You remember this?
Yeah.
Then they're like, don't brief those people. Don't brief Congress, okay? Don't brief Congress.
Yeah.
And, you know, Rourke says, like, that seemed like a really, what do you say, a brazen way of saying our job is to misinform Congress. Because, you know, it's more important that this Trailblazer program, people are interested in what works. Someone came over and was like, I heard you got a cheap Trailblazer. So let me talk about it. All of a sudden, Trailblazer people uninvited are in the meeting. You remember hearing about that?
Yep.
So it, but nonetheless, they've got that program. Benny is a super analyst, a legend. So no one's getting rid of SARC. They're just hoping that they don't make a lot of noise down there, right? And so it is SARC's job, after all. So they're continuing to do a Thin Thread because they needed a real world way to understand things, right?
Right.
Like I said, the briefings where people were not there who weren't supposed to, or the general once said, you don't embarrass corporations.
Yeah, I didn't understand that part. Like we're not going to embarrass the corporations.
Oh, now if you say that your crafty little deal down here works so well, then that's embarrassing by
don't
implication
embarrass.
The Trailblazer deal. You know, just because someone's trying to have oversight, right? So, and also the idea that money potentially available after 9/11 might be reduced if an in-house solution is a small percent as expensive. So what happens 3 weeks before 9/11? You saw it. They went into the office of the female Marine Baginski, who was third in charge at NSA.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, yeah, no more thin thread.
Yeah, we're done. What?
3 weeks before.
Right.
So, and...
It just, right there just says, makes you think,
What did... Well, here's another one, a quick aside. Guess who wasn't allowed to go to work the day after 9/11? When you think of all the times to make sure no more shit's about to happen.
Right.
It'd be a good time for SIG intelligence to be in office.
Right.
The general says, don't come in. So yeah, Bill Benny wasn't even supposed to be in the building. So do you remember Bill called how Maureen looked at it? She said, Maureen Baginski said, hey, I'd rather disappoint 6 people than 500. Because Trailblazer could employ 500. What does that have to do with it? Which thing is the stronger program?
Yeah. These people, and they should have all been fired. Like, all these people should have been in trouble. But did they get in trouble? Of course not.
So besides this, so this is 3 weeks before 9/11. But one thing we haven't covered is, well, and as I was watching uncomfortably, I'm like, well, geez, you're real proud of something that seems to be able to spy on everybody.
Yeah.
Well, they do get to it, but they don't get right to it. They're like, yeah, well, once we realize, I'm like, you're pretty smart. Why didn't you realize before? But you've been employed there and you're a patriot. You were there since, 1968 or 65. So I guess I get it. It's kind of where he ended up being. And he always thought there were limitations. And he goes, the thing is, though, if we're not careful, we could spy on too many people, including Americans. We're not supposed to do that. So we built in a very specific algorithm that even said not only, first of all, they anonymized it. So even if they did see that you talked to, target or node B, and then you texted them, and then you called them 5 times overnight. Unless there's that association, well, first of all, they don't know who you are.
Right.
So there's no, I'm going to abuse the system to go see what Kim's up
to. You can't type it in. It's just data. Yeah.
Now, foreign, it's different, but I think it may probably anonymize the whole globe, anonymized. But then on top of that, they said if it was a U.S. citizen, first of all, if there were no communications with areas, circles of kind of suspicion, like I said, if I'm just talking to my friends and none of them are in any weird criminal organizations or anything, then as an American, they wouldn't even pull your data, not even your metadata. So they did build a good algorithm in this SARC thin thread. Well, then around 9/11, they say, they said, this is monitoring every member of the population automatically. You invade everyone's privacy. That's not compatible with a democracy. That simply is not compatible. It's like the Stasi on super steroids or the KGB on super steroids. These are things they couldn't even dream of. That's where we have to do something to protect individuals here. So that's how they built these algorithms in. Well, they work these FISA aspects where you have to go to a FISA court before you can spy on somebody. It's kind of like a search warrant for Americans. You don't just get to electronically spy. Well, after 9/11, in the days after 9/11, first of all, Bill's immediate reaction was, well, that was a failure, right? And then Maureen Baginski tells employees that 9/11 is a gift to the NSA. We're going to get all the money we need and then some.
Oh, my gosh. That part right there just made me cringe.
Yeah.
Like, she just came in the room like, no big deal. Like, wow. Didn't even show any compassion of just like, wow, we're going to get so much money now. We're not going to have any problems. That's so sad.
So a contractor, when these folks did kind of get back to work a little bit, they'd been in a meeting with Sam Visner, who was the former SAIC guy who's now at the NSA. And they said, don't embarrass large companies. You do your part. You'll get your share. There's plenty for everybody. And we could milk this cow for 15 years. So then a contractor employee also tells that group, Benny and Loomis and Weeb, that down the hall, they're spying on all Americans. They've dropped all the privacy algorithm limitations. Previously, they'd seen a bunch of equipment come in. Just kind of stacked
like afterwards,
everywhere.
It's just all this equipment started coming in.
And then it disappears. And then they hear what's happening. They're They're doing what we were trying to do in a less elegant way, but using the part that we that they would have to do, which is Benny built, but they took away the privacy concerns.
Yeah.
You know, they took away the privacy limitations. So by late September, this stuff is piling up, and a contract of folks says, you know what they're doing down there? They're taking in data on every U.S. citizen in the country. So they knew they had to use a software that managed large-scale operations, and that's the stuff Benny put together. But they took out the protection rights for privacy. So they knew they were spying on American citizens. So they become disgusted. This is Rourke, Bill, and Kirk, and Loomy. And, well, actually, Rourke says that Bill and Kirk and Loomy say, hey, we've had enough. And they take a retirement on October 31st of 2001. And afterwards, there's one guy left. I don't think Rourke had quite left, our internal staffer. There's a guy named Drake. He'd been around since he was in the NSA at the 1993 World Trade Center bombing. If you remember, he talked about the briefing he did and said, this is a big deal. This is the beginning. And everybody's right. Like, don't worry about those ragheads and their,
yes,
you know.
Yes, yep.
You know, and so it was very much a parallel to Benny going, yeah, we told them. They just didn't listen. We told the generals back in Vietnam. They just didn't listen. They had the information. So Drake's still there. He was initially a contractor, but on 9/11, he starts as a direct employee. Sometime after that, he decides to run Thin Thread on the data that they had at the time before 9/11, just to see, had they been using the thing, what they could have found. And it was dramatic. And Drake says, we let it run 24 to 36 hours. Initial results were devastating. Critical intelligence that the NSA had not discovered, setting in the database. But even the specific details of numbers and movements and times and locations and travel and seeing the dispersal patterns that occurred and seeing parts of the plot that were not successful. More planes were targeted. Yeah. What if all that this was discovered prior to 9/11? The information was in the database. The NSA's response, according to Drake at the time, was to completely shut the program down.
So, like, after 9/11, and I'm talking like a year or so, this was on, like, the news. Like, there was, like, an interview or whatever, because those exact words was someone, and it might have been him or one of them, were on a news show and saying that this could have been stopped if they would have just used the software. Now, I didn't have all this background of what they were doing, but I remember, because when they said there were more planes, there were this, and I've already knew all that. Like, when I was watching, I was like, how did I know that? And so I'd seen that before. This isn't the first time it's been told that there are more planes that never made it off the ground.
I wasn't cynical enough early enough to look into it. I was cynical, but I didn't want to look at anything for a while because I'm always afraid what I'm going to find if I look. Rourke said 9/11, straight and simple, would have been avoided. We would have caught the people communicating from San Diego with known terrorists abroad. And there's no way we wouldn't have caught that. So there's a lot more going on, and the movie's great. And we're going to have a discussion real quickly, but real quickly for the postscript, the movie's available on Vimeo for $3.99. I also found it on Sling. That's how I found it. I had to search. It wasn't just sitting there in the on-demand area, but once I searched, I could watch it. And Kim found it, but I forget
IMDb.
Where.
So IMDb. If you have a Fire Stick, all you have to do is just search and just say...
A good American,
and it'll pop it up, and you'll get it on IMDb.
A postscript otherwise is everyone gets terrorized through the justice system. The movie does go into that, but we're running out of time, so I don't want to get into it. They do get terrorized via the, quote, justice system. Like everybody involved that's on the good guy list did. Nobody gets hard time because there was nothing to it. And the other postscript is there are plenty of articles out there that go into Drake getting in big trouble, and he didn't do anything. He ends up, so you can look into that. Great sources of articles. There's a PBS article called United States of Secrets, Thomas Drake and the Espionage Accounts Against Him, and a Wired article called The New Yorker Sheds New Light on the NSA's Warrantless Wiretapping and Data Mining, and then whatever that The New Yorker article would be. If you go to agoodamerican.org, that's their website, you can
contribute there and support them. You can also find out more and get the video there. And there's a subwebs page called Protagonist, which explain the players involved. So that's what I have for this show.
Right.
And then we can just kind of discuss our thoughts and other things that you feel like are important to emphasize.
Well, one of the things, I got to find back here what we were talking about.
What was it in general?
I had it and then it just left of, it was somebody... I gotta look. Because you were talking about it and it popped right in my head. When we're talking about the Drake and... Oh, I don't remember.
Drake has a lot of good. You can find some good. That PBS one is a Frontline thing. And it's really good about going through what he had to go to. You know where that guy... He worked 8 years at the NSA. And at the time that he was trying to make it through these Espionage Act cases, he didn't spy.
Right.
And they didn't even accuse him of spying, espionage, but they said supposedly he was storing classified material. He worked in an Apple store because he had just started his life new. While they were attacking him, he couldn't do anything. He was working at an Apple store outside of Washington or something.
Well, I mean, after 9/11, the four, they... made up some little hokey warrants and came and took all their stuff out of their houses.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of one of the reasons why he told that person, I will never kill myself. They said a few different times in there about you really couldn't get people to be on your side because they were too scared. They knew it was wrong, but they didn't want to lose their job. And I totally understand, but I don't know how people live with themselves. Like, I guess I just blurt things out, and I'm one of those people that I take the punch in the face to protect the little people all the time. And I work with those people all the time that are just like, I don't want to really say anything. What do you mean not say anything? So then I go say something and I'm the one that's attacked, but I still believe that it needs to be said. And I commend people who put the safety of others and other people before themselves, because that's what he was like. Well, you don't just go get another job, like, from what I'm doing, and you're probably making pretty good money doing what you're doing. You're gonna go work at the Apple store, you're gonna go to Walmart, you like what you do, you feel as if, I think you would feel as if you had a little control, and at least if you were there, you could know what's going on. But I think when they took his stuff down at that point, it was over. Like, I just felt bad that more people aren't, they let us down.
Yes.
And it's not just them. It's still happening. It is still with our elected officials. It is still with all those people in power. You get a little bit too much power, it goes to your head and you make some stupid ass mistakes.
Well, there's a couple to me. That's where the good comes in. When I read more postscript in the end of this, I read other articles in the end of this. Those guys really did put their foot down and go, guys, we can't do that. We've got FISA limitations. The Drake, like, said at some point, Baginski's like, go talk to the lead counsel. So he goes to the lead counsel, the NSA, and says, this is unconstitutional. What are you doing? Counsel's like, I don't know what to tell you, man. I mean, the president said it's okay. They said
we're
it's
gonna
okay.
Do it.
I don't know what the legal, I don't know the legal reasoning. I just know the president, they said they've had authority. So, you know, it's like a lot of these people did say, no, for real, this is wrong.
Right.
I mean, three of them resigned.
Yeah,
and then they ended up taking up, and you can find that in the video too, what they did to kind of fight back a bit. And they also have a follow up video. I don't have the name of it, but they name it on that website. So that's one thing. Another thing that's an interesting, there's a couple things that for me cross over with what I see otherwise being in the government sector now, and that is, you know, what contractors can do and the type of money they can waste on the taxpayer's dime versus just internal employees. That's one thing. Another thing is that SAIC that got the giant contract, remember that thing died on the vine never even went into production in like 2005. You know, after whatever it was, 2, 3, 4
They got
years.
Their money, and then just went away.
Yeah. The one person said it made plenty of millionaires.
Yeah.
Right? But it never made, it never brought any intelligence.
Right.
That would have been 1,000 years worth of thin thread.
Yeah.
Because it was two and a half million a year. But the SAIC, it's a lot of those NSA guys. It was a lot of former NSA guys going, now we try to get government contracts.
Right. Yeah,
so all these people with connections going, why would you do that in-house? We can do it for you.
You know, well,
and that's what happens.
That happened in the state of Kansas when our governor decided to dismantle our in-house IT, ship it to St. Louis. He leaves, they screw it up, and we have to bring it back. So his buddies down there, because that's what he did when he was in office. If I mean, if you looked into it, and when we would bring it up and say, like, did you know that he this and that? We can't talk about that. Like, nobody will talk about it. It's like they get really scared. And that's just a local Kansas stuff. Like, we went to the press and we said, this.
Oh, yeah, we can't.
Yeah, no. We're not going to touch that. Well, what so part of the media do we have? So, Americans out there, just remember that what you see in the media is what you are told, what they are told to tell you to get to keep you calm.
And unfortunately, the more centralized, scared, the worst.
To keep you whatever. When she came in and she said that their computer system was the worst, outdated piece of equipment out there, that like your home computer did better than their computer system. And they were like, oh, we're the best. Once again, just because someone gives you some bullshit doesn't mean it's true. And right. That's what the government does. And that's what it still does to today.
When you see those rare cases where somebody goes, well, that's not true at all. You know, and that's the brain you want on your organization.
Right.
Not the ones that go, oh, well, no, yeah, well, no, no, you know, whatever. I just find it, it's such an interesting dynamic of how we go from something that can cost $2.5 million a year and be quite sufficient. And then go, nah, let's go with $2.5 billion instead. And fail. And not even work.
And so,
but yet we keep that person in place because he's a legend. We just hope he doesn't make a lot of noise.
Mm-hmm.
At some point, the Drake guy, who was the younger guy who stayed on, he said at some point they basically took all my duties away from me. I was sitting in an office and eventually I knew the end was coming and just didn't know how bad it was going to be. How much do you have somebody who is outspoken, say a Kim, in a good spot like that, where like she's going to hold down the fort, and then like, well, we can't get rid of her easy, but we're just going to take away power from her.
Right.
She can either get out or she can stay and not be very powerful. If she does get out, the chances are someone not as opinionated and not as stuck to the principles will come in and we're good shape then. If she stays in, doesn't matter. We took away her power anyway.
But you know what? You're paying me a big paycheck and I can do my TikToks. I mean, like, I'm just going to my office. You know, my friend, him and his dad owned a company and they sold it to this other place, and part of that contract said that he had a job there for a certain amount of money for 5 years. And so he started out there and he was doing his job the second year. And on the third year, they took away most of his job. And on the fourth year, he took away, no, I guess it was 10 years. It was a 10-year contract. Anyway, currently he works for this company, makes over $100,000 a year and works 2 days a week because they don't need him. It was just basically a buyout. And every time I see him,
why couldn't they fire him?
It was part of the contract when they bought the company. It's his company. Okay. So they bought the company and he had 10 years. And so he 10 years at this salary with whatever.
Smart.
But at first he was there. Second, he was there. Mind you, they made millions on selling the company. But he is he was in his 40s. And so he still wanted a job. And he knew all the clients. He had run it. You know, you want to do it. So they used him for the first 2 years. And every time you see him out, he's like this. Man, they took more stuff away from me. And they think I care. Like, he's out just living life, buying cars, having a good time, traveling. And he's like, they put me down to 2 days a week. if I go, I don't even have to go. But that's because it's in their contract. He's enjoying. And after 10 years or whatever, then he goes on. But like I said, he's got millions of dollars. But he's still, it's kind of funny to me. It's like they only wanted him for at least 2 years to switch over. And then they just kind of booted him out.
Yeah, that works. But at least they're not doing unconstitutional
things.
They're
not. Yeah, they're not doing bad things.
I'm telling you, though, the one whistleblower attorney someone to look into, her name is Jesselyn. So think of Jessa and then L-Y-N, J-E-S-S-A-L-Y-N.
My niece is Jesselyn.
And then Radack, R-A-D-A-C-K. She was a whistleblower herself, was a whistleblower attorney, as a director of National Security and Human Rights for the Government Accountability Project. And was the fireball attorney for the Thomas Drake guy, the one who stayed on. He ended up being kind of a, he ended up telling the Baltimore Sun, saying, hey, there's fraud, waste, and abuse. And they're like, espionage. And it's like, no, whistleblower is supposed to be able to talk about fraud, waste, and abuse.
Here's the funny thing. So I have clients that hire me to come in. And they've had problems. So, like, I have to rebuild their accounting systems, and they've had probably some problems. In fact, one of them had FBI problems. I went in, and I developed a system, and then I told them how the system was broken and how we needed to change it. They disagreed with me, and I told them how fraud and embezzlement could happen. And I was let go because they thought I was going to commit fraud and embezzlement because I knew how to do it. Well, that's my job. Like, I took those classes in college so that I can build you a system, because if you don't know how it works, you can't keep it from happening, you morons. But because other stuff was going on, they thought that the one guy thought that I was going to bust him for his stuff because I was that deep into this, but I wasn't. I was just trying to change the fact that when I leave, because I'm not permanent here, I'm only here to fix your problem. And when we hire the next person, your accounting person can't sign your checks. You have to get the bank statements, look them over, initial them, then give them to the accounting person. And the executive director wasn't doing any of this. So here I am. We're going to have to let you go because we believe that you have intentions on committing fraud.
Yes.
No. Like, okay. Of course,
it's more like you brought up a lot of problems. And right. Now we're uncomfortable with those problems. And you're going to keep bringing up the problems if you keep being here.
Right. So we wanted you to be gone, and they're no longer because they got shut down. But I've been that way. I've done that twice. I've gotten let go from my jobs twice because when I go in and I'm very serious about things that are being done wrong, they're just kind of like, they have that thing like, I think she's doing something wrong. No, I am not doing anything wrong. I'm the most honest person. Why would I come and tell you what I'm doing?
If I was just going to be fraudulent, I'd just find your weaknesses and take advantage of
it. Right, exactly. I would take my cool million and I'd be out of here, and you'd be too dumb to even figure out the problem. But so I, you know, it's really hard to do those kind of jobs. So I understand when you're going to somebody and you're trying to tell them immediately and they don't want you to talk about it, they let you go. And you feel like they're telling you that you're the problem, when in reality, your intelligence is the problem.
If Benny didn't have so much seniority and had not founded his own little skunk works, if you will, type little area where I'm going to bring in my people and we're going to work on a problem and we kind of keep to ourselves. Do you remember the part where they said, you know what the thing was? It was Rourke, the professional staffer, said, I've heard about it, but when I first said I'd like a briefing from the SARC people, they're like, who? So these people are just trying to work on a problem down in the basement, if you will.
Yeah, leave us alone.
We're not worried about leave. We just make sure we get just enough money to continue to work on our problem. And we're not going to, you know, really talk about it until we got it fixed. We're not trying to be visible or come complain about the budget. And luckily, they had Rourke. What I liked about Rourke, too, did you hear? This is a female professional staffer saying, I made sure they got the money because I believed in their mission.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of, had she not been smart and informed and understand and truly took those initial briefings of the NSA stinking and going, man, at least Thin Thread's doing something about it. At least SARC is, they're doing this Thin Thread thing. This is probably really important. I need to make sure that Congress knows that this is a smart thing to give their allotment to.
Right.
And had she not, I mean, maybe Bill, Bill was very resourceful. Maybe he could have done the same thing off of 500,000, but that's why I really appreciated her, because she was kind of a firebrand too.
Right.
And some of the articles talk about her that way too. It's like some people loved her, some people hated her because she's, you know, more like Kim. It's like,
right.
She's going to tell you straight up. So,
right. You have to have it that way. The lady that was talking about, man, we just have an endless amount of money. They're just going to fund us. Like, she's, I don't even know how she would sleep at night to automatically think 5,000 people are dead and she's all excited because now we're just going to get money.
The other thing, too, is I found a recent profile where she's a speaker as a working mother. But to her credit, some of the back end story is that she allegedly started feeling a little bit uncomfortable. You can read this as the case in a few places, at least. I don't know if it's actually true. And she left in 2003. But at least at the time, she's like, rah, 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 sis, boom, bah. No, this wasn't.
And then if you look on the op, you play devil's advocate or whatever. If you're going to places and you're like this, we need an upgrade and we need money and we need to do this. And they're like, nope, 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 nope. And for her to come in and be like, they're not going to tell us no now because of this. It's a whole different context. I mean, you're taking it from the word of the guy that's on the show, but she could have just meant we have been fighting for money and now they're going to listen to us.
I wasn't super.
But the way he said it was, she was just money hungry and didn't care.
I wasn't super offended by it. I mean, that's what people are going to say. You know, a bit. But to me, it's a lower level of intelligence because.
Right.
It's not about the budget. It's about evaluating things. And she, of all people, knew Thin Thread was effective at a tiny percentage of the budget. So why would she, even if she wanted the more money, why does she cut that off? But I see in the public sector, sometimes I go, is that person getting a little paid off? Because they really just went for advocating for a certain side that doesn't really seem like, I mean, surely not. You always think, nobody gets paid off.
Oh, my
but
gosh.
But people get paid off.
They do.
I wouldn't because I would never accept it. And people could tell from a mile away I wouldn't accept it.
But it's not even accepting.
You're not going to budget. You're not going to get it through him. So you're going to try somebody else.
But that's not even. I mean, it can be a huge one or it can be where you've got Mark over here and he's talking to you and you can make decisions and then you make that decision and you guys get to be buddies or whatever. And next thing you know, he's taking you and your family on a trip because he has a house over here. It's not even necessarily a conscious thing that some people actually even think of that they're getting it because you've got people that hang out with you and we're not talking anything government. We're just talking about human nature. There are people that hang out because you have a boat. They're only friends, and then they're just kind of like,
if you didn't have a boat, they wouldn't be there.
They wouldn't be there, but you know what? My friend Troy needed floors, and the guy with the boat does floors, so I refer my friend over here, and I start getting my friend jobs, but yet my friend takes me on the boat. That can be the exact same thing, and those are just little. Like, that's little. Now we're talking move it up to the next, move it up to the next. It happens in all sets of life.
But, people rationalize, right?
You don't.
Woman knew that Thin Thread was at 1/100th to 1/1000th the budget and was working well.
Right.
So, yes, she can rationalize, well, geez, what will the general say?
Yeah.
Save some time.
Yeah.
No, what will the general say? I mean, somebody has to give him the bad news, right?
I just got what you said. A dumb commercial.
Dumb commercial, yeah. I couldn't remember the rest of it or you would have gotten it quicker. You know, she could have been like, man, if I don't do this, somebody has to deliver the bad news.
Right.
And that's a small rationalization, but I'm telling you what, it's not a rationalization Rourke would have taken.
Right.
Should have been like, no, I'm not going to tell them to stop Thin Thread. Are you stupid?
Yeah.
He's the smartest guy in this building.
Right.
And they're doing something that's effective.
Yeah.
They have a particular center for. Right. I'm not going to tell them to stop it.
But then your brain goes, why did they tell them to stop it 3 weeks before something bad was happening? Did somebody know and something else happened? That's when you get into
you can't totally think that conspiratorially, which I did. Because I just don't like to bring an old wind. But it's like, well, those are the people who are most likely to catch anything if there was anything to catch.
But
Bill Binney, both morally and capability-wise, and his team were the most likely to catch anything if funny business was happening.
But the thing is that coincidences make the best conspiracies. And I'm not saying that there wasn't or was. I'm just saying that when something happens, there's always a you can always come up with a conspiracy of something, especially when it's a coincidence. I mean,
they weren't running it everywhere anywhere. That's the thing. It's not like it was worldwide. It may not. I mean, he asked for that. Remember, like, you know, the 10 months before when he said November 2000, hey, I think these 18 sites are the best. Can I start running them? If they would have been doing that, they would have caught it.
Yeah.
But they were not. So the fact that it just got.
I mean, that's now?
The other thing.
Right now, my Google Doc can tell you.
Yeah.
I mean, my Amazon Doc is keeping track of me, and my Facebook knows exactly what I want. And you read my mind.
I think that is ridiculous. I think that it went over to. This is another topic that I have suspicions on, and you can see things on who all did the NSA and DARPA actually fund, and then what was their intention?
Right.
Well, because your smartphone does everything that all this they were hoping to get done in one spot.
they're done.
I didn't get to this, but since you let me talk this long, related, after privacy concerns in July of 2003, Project LifeLog RFP was adjusted so that those out in the real world capturing experiences. So they said, hey, we need some people that want to capture experiences in the real world. We want a Project LifeLog, everything, sight, sounds, everything. And they said, hey, what about the people who are not consenting or around? Well, our smartphones set out of our pockets now. I'm consenting or not, if they wanted to turn down that phone, I'm being seen.
Yes.
So anyway, in 2004, Project LifeLog was announced as canceled. 2004, Facebook was founded. And what is the name of the movie about Facebook?
The social network.
And what did Binney say back here? He used the term the social network. I'm not saying he was in on it. I say, isn't that interesting? If you will, its community, if you will, the social network it had, you pull all of the backup data that created those relationships. There is, of course, that those potential threads of there have been so many things that have been funded. What did they do with that? All of a sudden, I doubt the importance went down in their eyes. I mean, they probably still said, well, we just went from half a million to billions. What are we doing with these billions? And is it anybody's business? Oh, no, LifeLog. Oh, it's controversial. Oh, we shut Project LifeLog down. Oh, a trailblazer? Oh, yeah, no, total abject failure. Did they just throw the money somewhere else?
Smartphones, go for it.
Yeah, well, when did they start? When did Google start? Was it like the mid-noughts? I call the noughts because you can say that. The mid-aughts. You know, 04, 05, 06.
I don't know.
Was it the mid-aughts?
I don't know.
You know, so Facebook was founded 04. Amazon founded somewhere around that time, maybe a little bit later. All those potentially could be partially. And I can tell you this, some of the follow-up articles, 1998. Okay. So.
But nobody knew about Google back in 1998. I mean, it wasn't. We still had
maybe
AOL.
Maybe didn't get big until 05 or something. But some of the follow-up articles say because they weren't using this elegant solution. They had to use this giant ramrod of a solution instead of this elegant one of just taking in everything and now just throwing computer power at it. Still taking in everything, which he said was a stupid idea. But now throwing material. They can take in everything a lot more with Google Ad Services because nobody knew at first Google Ad Services was going to pay attention to all this extra shit. They just thought I'm on Google. I'm using Google. And all of a sudden it's like, how am I getting all these customized shit? Well, we got Google Ad Services behind the scenes. We didn't tell you. No, you didn't fucking tell us.
Right.
Well, that's how we're collecting your behavior.
Right.
And so if it's connected to something besides ad services, it's serving the same function.
But before the internet, advertising was how we, is how they sold their stuff. And so they would do the same advertising. They had the same thing. If you watched a particular show, they assumed you smoked a certain cigarette or you used a certain product. And they would have you fill out these surveys and everything. We still gathered information, but you filled out surveys and you mailed things in. They still tried to. And now we have all this stuff, it's just incredible. If anybody doesn't think that the government doesn't know what you're doing, and I'm saying, remember when we said with the metadata, and we're not talking words, your phone isn't listening and recording your words with some guy on the other end, hearing it. But if I'm sitting here and I'm talking about, I'm going to kill da 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 da, and I'm going to do this and I'm going to do that, those words can be recorded, brought up into an algorithm.
I think they have a passive, did these get said? If so, turn on the regular full record.
That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. And I'm just saying that it's out there.
Those follow-up articles were there. And as far as where are we now for real? What is the replacement of this? That's kind of an obvious follow-up to this. But of course, it's like, I can't bring it all the way up to 2021.
Yeah,
but it's out there. There are plenty of articles if you go and look, especially the older ones are still available. You can still go find the old Wired articles and things.
It'd be interesting to find out how many attacks that they've stopped since 9/11, because they've been we're not going to hear about them. You know that they just take them down. That's really what, I mean, we don't need to hear about them. Well, they just need to stop them.
If it's not the elegant solution, then they're still running into the same problem. So I don't know. One of the the things that happened after is those three said, hey, our solution is still our solution. If the government's not going to pay attention to it, worst case, we try to get some of the other parts of the government to pay attention to it. The solution still makes better sense than just mass data gathering, because you can't get through it. And so they did try to do three different contracts, at least, if not five or six. Started contracts doing well, showing that it worked well with National Reconnaissance Office and other places, even the CIA.
Right.
Then the NSA finds out about it and they get stopped in their tracks on a contract that they won that they're doing well at.
Right.
Even one where they said, okay, we'll compare it to your NSA results or whatever it was. They said, yeah, well, ours got better results than yours did.
Right.
We ran it. It worked. And they said, we'll shut that down.
Well, you guys need to go watch, if this stuff interests you, definitely go watch this show.
Did you think you look like Michael Shannon?
I don't know who Michael Shannon is.
Gosh. We'll look it up right after.
We'll have to look it up. Yeah. I didn't pay attention. When I'm watching, I'm listening. Today I was cooking dinner and working at the same time, just trying to remember what was going on in the show. These are the kind of shows that you really kind of want to watch. It doesn't go too crazy. This is what I like. It doesn't make you think, oh, that's ridiculous. These are just, this is facts that happened.
Yeah.
This is
happened to people. You can find any number.
Yeah.
All the stuff is well documented. It's not like it's just somebody's documentary.
And
there are New Yorker articles on it. Yeah. There's Wired articles on it. There's articles
on it. There's not even a movie about it yet. Like, there probably is. There's probably a movie where they've used this scenario, kind of in there, because that's how they make movies.
Somebody said anyway. Snowden, maybe that's why Snowden didn't go through those channels, because he's like, well, that didn't do this Thomas Drake very much good.
Yeah.
He's being terrorized and had 35 years of prison looking at him. He's like, Drake's like, yeah, I'm not going to give in to that. And so eventually he got a misdemeanor where he had to, they were looking at 10 different felony counts. Some or most of them, under the Espionage Act, so pretty serious. And then he's like, yeah, no. And so he finally does plea, but only to a misdemeanor of overusing his computer. By his attorney's account, it was kind of like using your work computer to get on Facebook too much.
To get on Facebook, yeah. whatever. All right, guys, thank you so much for giving us your time. We always appreciate our listeners, and we're excited to continue our shows. Make sure to go to Facebook, to our group, Chemology 411, make some comments, interact, give us topics if you want us to talk about something. We're always looking for something to talk about. I mean, we can find our own, but if you guys have something, let us know. Find me on TikTok. If you do, make sure you send me a message and say, hey, you're a listener. Because I have got over 2,100 followers on there. It is not, TikTok is not a social media where you can interact with people very well. So you have to send me a message, and I might see it when I look through my messages, because I get hundreds of messages a day. But do reach out there. We're on Instagram. We're on Twitter. So make sure to find us on there, and our YouTube channel. We have the first 40 episodes on YouTube. If you want to check us out there and share us and subscribe, that would be absolutely awesome. Thank you, Tyson, for coming up with a topic. So I didn't have to do that this week.
Yeah, if you're busy again next week, we'll come up with another one. Just make it light, not maybe kind of a halfway in between, not just ghosts,
yes,
but also not NSA spy stuff. So somewhere kind of halfway in between.
Something,
I'll try,
yeah,
to start thinking of it.
Yes.
All right, guys, again, that's Kim Schultz and I over on Chemology 411. We have, gosh, if it's not 200 episodes, it's not far from it at this point. So we've been going for over 3 years now. And in some weeks, we did multiple. We definitely put out an episode every single week. And then here and there, for a little while there, we put out bonus episodes called Systematic Chaos that were just kind of miscellaneous points. And then, of course, Kim has her own episodes as well. So check me out over there in a little bit different flavor of a host, as I'm a co-host there and just get to be a little bit more free and have fun and just get to be the sounding board or the silly person over there. So check me out in those other episodes. Follow Kim and Chemology 411. And again, thanks for listening here. Like this episode, follow the show, get notifications so you know when I send a new one. I can be a little bit sporadic, even though I do have quite a library to this point. All right, guys and ladies. And kiddos, maybe there are some kiddos who want to follow the strange magic that is the brain of Tyson Harley. It's so good on you, kids. You're on a good path. Anyway, thanks for listening, everybody.